And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host, and we have... this is the second week in a row that we lost a guest due to laryngitis. So our laryngitis guest from last week is joining us, and that's Marcia Barnhart. And I'm pretty darn excited about having her on. I've listened to some shows that she's done. She's really on the ball. I think you really enjoy her. And she was like a charter member of the Aerial Phenomenon Investigations Team. And I think that was back in 2011 when that was formed. And she is a pro. You know, she's been in radio and television for quite a while. So anyway, I think you'll really enjoy her this evening. Our show, the Everything Else Show, is now available for anyone that is a subscriber to Podcast UFO. That's all part of the feed. I hope you enjoy that. There's all different types of topics. We're scheduled all the way into June, I think mid-June already. So that is going well. That's, if you want to listen to that or watch that, I should say, it's live stream, just as this show is. That's on Monday evenings, and you'll see the link to the Everything Else Show right on Podcast UFO, or you can see it on YouTube as well. Very, very active chat room, a lot of fun. So same with this show here. And that is it. If you support the show, I want to say thank you very much. And all it costs is $2 or more a month for anyone that's kind of on the edge that may want to help us out. You can check all that information on our website. Alejandro, how are you?
Good. So what do you have to say to the people who don't want to support you?
I like it. Each and every listener, thank you for listening to the show, whether you can or cannot support the show. And if you like to support the show, but you can't, just send me an email.
Well, that's nice. You're so nice.
Yeah.
Some people would say, if you don't want to support me, then you can flip off or something like that. But no, that was very nice of you.
So what's going on with you?
So what's going on? You mean with UFO news or with me in particular?
Yes.
Well, they often are one and the same, so I can think of something going on with me that is UFO related, which is on our YouTube, and let me plug it. I posted a lecture I gave to Phoenix MUFON, which is similar but expanded to what I gave to the Phoenix Symposium or MUFON Symposium last summer. So you can see my talk on international UFO, official government UFO organizations, how they got started, the often amazing cases that got these governments started in UFO research. I covered the existing ones. I lightly covered the U.S., Canada, but the U.K. is particularly interesting. I don't think people know the history there so much. So that's a good one. But of course, I cover France and Chile and lots of other stuff. So you're asking about me personally. That's what's going on with me.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, what about the UFO world?
The UFO world. The whole world is a UFO world. So what's funny is there's a lot of attitude towards this Tom DeLonge thing, people criticizing us for having given him an award. But it's kind of funny because people are like, oh, I can't believe that. They're still talking about it. People will not shut up about Tom DeLonge and what he may or may not reveal, even the people who are just disgusted that it exists at all. I don't understand that perspective. Because why not? You know, if he's out there doing stuff, why not pay attention to it and see what he's up to? But it's kind of funny. The reason I bring it up is because Mother Jones did an interview that was actually pretty good recently that people can check that out. You can see that in our daily headlines. Also in the headlines, this is kind of weird. Maybe you'll have an answer to it. Yesterday, actually, the Denver News Channel, which is a local Denver actually TV station, and that's just their website, they wrote about, they looked into the Blue Book files and they put like a top 10 list together of Colorado Blue Book files, which is kind of cool. So, you know, that's cool. I can see a reporter running across those and wanting to do that. However, today here in the Phoenix area, they wrote a story about a UFO occurrence. And in that story, they embedded 15 Arizona UFO stories from Project Blue Book. So they also went into Project Blue Book to take a look. So that's kind of weird, huh?
Wow. You know, the average Joe out there wouldn't have any idea what Project Blue Book was. They'd think it's something to, you know, find a car on or something, maybe.
Yeah, you know, you're right, because they even write about it. They write, the Arizona Republic sifted through more than 100 reports from the Project Blue Book files, researching reports from, or searching for the interesting, the bizarre, and unbelievable stories from Arizona's UFO sightings. Right there, which is interesting, they're assuming people know what Project Blue Book is. And I think you're right that not everybody does.
Right.
But the story they embedded that into, because that's kind of a gallery in a story. But the story is something they took from Preston Dennett's recent book about UFOs over Arizona, where a man claimed to have seen a UFO land in the local zoo, the Phoenix Zoo here.
Wow. Picking up specimens, I'm sure.
Yep, specimens. A great place to pick up a specimen. And it's a cool zoo. I love our zoo. It's just actually here in the Tempe, near Tempe. It's just up the street here. And really nice. Of course, it gets hot in the summer. But we have two zoos. So we have the main Phoenix Zoo here. And then outside of town, we have the Jack Hanna, like, wildlife zoo or something like that. It's huge. They have white tigers there, and they keep a lot of birds and stuff. It's kind of a rescue as well.
Oh. So well, that's really that part's good. That's great.
So yeah, there's some. I have one more UFO news story.
Great. Okay.
So this is cool. This is something Roger Marsh posted today, and it is another account of a giant triangular UFO that simply disappeared.
Wow. Is this the one in Pennsylvania?
It is.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania.
I was looking at that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The witness was driving near their home at 8:30 p.m. on February 14th, 2017, when the incident occurred. My attention was drawn to a triangular object in the sky quickly flying towards me, the witness stated. It was low and had a couple of alternating bright flashing white lights with the red light. There were several other smaller flashing white lights that outlined the rectangular object. So he said he was drawn to watch it. He stopped on the road, watched it for a while, and then it made a quick 90-degree change and simply disappeared.
Wow. I was thinking I was watching the Unexplained Files or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with all that, your commentary.
Oh, yeah. Oh, with the way I was doing that. Did you like that?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
And I alternated between the narrator voice and the witness voice.
I think we caught that, Alejandro.
Uh-huh, just to make it a little more exciting. But yeah, the person said the event only took a couple minutes and it happened so quickly they were not able to take pictures. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much par for the course, you know. The fact that it disappeared is just... You know, just something you do hear of quite a bit and almost makes you, it's just more wonderment, you know, what the heck could it be?
What the hell is up with those damn triangular craft?
That's right. Let's get Dave Marler on the phone right now. Ask him what's going on.
WTF.
Yeah, You got it, man. All right. That sounds like a wrap for today.
Okay, there you go. There's the news. You can read it all at openminds.tv. And remember, you might have to go into like the daily headlines to see some of those stories I talked about. But otherwise, you'll find everything right there on the front page.
Great. All right, Alejandro, thanks a lot.
Thank you, my friend.
Sure thing. Hang in, everyone, for just a quick music break, and we'll be right back with Marcia Barnhart. Hello there, Marcia. How are you doing?
Very well. Good to see you again, Martin.
Yes, yes. Thanks for being on the show.
It's a pleasure.
I appreciate it. And I mentioned in the monologue that I listened to a couple of your shows that you do with API and really thought you did a very professional job. Well, much better than Martin. Me. So, hey, what got you interested? I just want to start, what got you interested in this topic to begin with?
Well, much like you, Martin, when I was growing up in the 60s, there was a UFO flap in my little town. And that had a big impact on me because the people who were talking about seeing strange creatures and weird lights were my father's friends, you know, adults who I didn't think we'd be making those things up because, you know, that was their reputation. And some of the things they talked about were just weird.
What part of the country did you grow up in?
I'm an Oregonian.
Oh.
I grew up in a little lumber town called Toledo, which is about 10 miles right from the coast, the Pacific coast. So I essentially grew up in a rainforest. I'm an Oregonian. And this was a little flap in my town in the 60s and it was the late 60s. So it was probably 64, 65, 66, something like that.
I have a friend that lives on Gold Beach.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know where that is? Yeah.
Yes.
And she says there's things going on there now. You know, I mean, I don't know if you stay in touch with anyone back there and how much activity that people talk about, but she had such a strange story, I almost wanted to bring it onto this show. At some point I might if I feel comfortable enough, but it's pretty odd. But it has to do with that town and offshore and all that.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff on the beach. I know it's ongoing. I did an API case for a guy from Newport about 6-7 months ago. And Newport is real close to Gold Beach, and this thing he saw was a large T-shaped craft that was flying off kilter, and it went right over the ocean. And the neat thing about this guy was a professional. He was an oceanographer. He was a PhD. And it pretty much rattled his world, but I got a good case out of him and got a good interview. So sure, it's going on, and when you read Newport reports, it's going on everywhere.
I know. There was an article that came out, I don't know if you saw it, I think it was about 2 years ago, where someone wrote, "Where's all the UFOs? Is nothing happening anymore?" And I've never seen anything slow down since I started to look into this topic.
Yeah. Flaps are a whole different thing, you know, it's a real dust-up of activity for a while, and however long they last, you don't know. They're transitory. But there's pretty much, if you look at New Fork, which is one of my favorite places to just browse, you know, because I kind of correlate some data off that, knowing full well that some of these things are just, you know, planes going over or whatever, so you have to glean through. But it's happening all the time in every state. And I got a couple of cases from India, and I'd read somewhere, somebody had written that it seemed like there was an uptick of cases in India, but I don't really know.
Wow. You know, there's a bunch of people all saying hi to you in the chat room.
Hi. Greetings. Greetings across the ether.
Yes, that's right. It is really amazing, isn't it, that here we are. You're out there in California, and here I am, you know.
No. I'm sorry.
You're still in Oregon. Michigan.
Yeah, I'm sitting here looking out my – I'm from Oregon. Yes, oh, I was born
Michigan.
And raised in Oregon. But then I joined the Air Force and went away for forever, and I ended up in Baltimore working, and then – my husband and I retired here in northern Michigan, just outside of Cadillac.
Now, I hear I've been through Michigan when I was, I used to kind of play or collect antique boats, and there's a lot of them out there because of all your lakes. It's absolutely beautiful, but you have some winters much like here in Maine, don't you?
Yeah. In fact, how much snow did you get from that snowmageddon? You know, when we talked not too long ago, you had a great big, we never got any, but I know you probably got
that was another additional 24 inches. So it's been enough. That's for sure. Yeah. But so sorry I got your location wrong. I was mixing you up with another guest. Pardon me about that.
Just keep in mind, Oregonians don't like Californians. It's a
long that's where everyone from California moves.
That's why Oregonians don't like Californians all that much.
That's right.
So bygones be bygones.
Yes.
I'm drinking tea because my throat is still sore.
I know.
And this is hot honey in here, and it just feels so good.
And just to let the listener know, this Sunday, I got a note from John Burroughs, who was the guest this week, said, I have laryngitis. And that's just what happened to you last week. So luckily, we were able to swap it out. And John's going to be on next week, that is, if his voice is in order. So you get interested in this basically since childhood. Is that right? And
absolutely.
And but then you decided to take it serious and join as one of the founding members of API. And that was back in 2011 when you first started forming that. Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Can you go into what the mission statement basically is of API?
Yeah, that's pretty much to do investigations on aerial phenomena that our point is to kind of try to figure out and research the information to the point that you could take it to a court. You know, we are not trying to prove there are UFOs. Or ETs or anything like that. We're agnostic when it comes to that. None of us know how you're going to prove that.
Yeah.
Or conversely disprove it. But we have a little niche area, and that is that we just investigate the report the best we can to find the facts to give the person, the witness, some idea of what they may have seen. And oftentimes we're able to do that. And people are really grateful that they have been told what this most likely is. Sometimes we can be 100%. I was just 100% with the case over Colorado. It was a high altitude weather balloon. And the witness who saw that, she was kind of upset by it. You know, it does kind of upset your worldview. And she was very happy to find out that it was a balloon that was as large as a stadium flying 16 miles up in the air.
Wow.
And it kind of came to a slow halt for a little bit because how the stratosphere works. And that freaked her out. And then it just kind of off it went. And so when I did the research on it, I found the guy whose organization launched that. And they said, they had gotten reports from Colorado. I mean, if something is 16 miles up in the air and it's pure white, you're going to see it for a long time. So things like that are very satisfying because not only do you as an investigator get to use your investigative chops and nail down what it is, but you can go back to the witness and tell them definitively what it is. And they have a good feeling about it because they had some closure to an oddity that vexed them. The problem is when you can't when you can't unvex someone, you know, they just have to live with what they saw and have to wrap their head around it, whatever it may be, because we cannot find an explanation.
Now, what about, I'm sure it happens the other way too, where someone doesn't want to listen to your prosaic explanation and they'd rather it be aliens?
Right, yeah. And there's really not much you can do about that. You write up your report and you get back with them and tell them what it most probably was. And it was not what they thought it was. We can prove that it was this. And, you know, every once in a while I've heard people write back and say, well, I know it wasn't that. Here's one case that really sticks with me. It was a lady who made a breathless report that she saw a cat in the clouds. And so when I talked with her, it was, you know, it was a cat, because if you watched for a few more minutes, it would turn into a rabbit. And then when you looked at it, it would turn into a buffalo and float off. You know, and it was a clear case of pareidolia. But for some reason, the lady just couldn't really go with that. And she kept saying, but it was a cat. It was a cat in the clouds. And, you know, I just kind of disengaged from that one, because for her, it was a cat in the clouds. And I don't know exactly what that meant to her, but there wasn't anything I was going to change about it. Yeah. But I was satisfied with what it was.
Right, right, yeah. Now,
what do you do?
Right, and what is the team that works? Now, I know we've had Paul Carr on this show, and yeah. he works at the Goddard Space Center.
Yeah.
Or he did. I'm pretty sure he sold out.
He's a space systems engineer. He's a real, real bright guy. I enjoy Paul a lot. We do. I do a podcast with him every once in a while as a little guest. He has a lot of very interesting characters plopped down in on the Unseen podcast. And we have an opportunity to just riff about science things. And so he's a real bright guy, and I get a lot of information from him, and we interact a lot. And then, of course, so he's the deputy director of API, and Antonio Paris is a professor of astronomy, and he's the director. And Antonio has been very busy just finishing up his dissertation. So that pretty much comprises a team. When we first started out in 2011, as a little background, now, I was a member of MUFON there in the Baltimore, Washington area, and Antonio was also a member of MUFON, but he was growing greatly disenchanted with the less than scholarly approach that many of the MUFON places were taking. Not all, but some. You know, they kind of are autonomous the way they run their particular state agency, it would seem. I'm very happy with my Michigan MUFON group. I see them about, you know, every once in a while. But so Antonio, coming from an investigative background where he was very deep into it and very nailed down, he thought he could do a better job of more scientifically working witness sightings. So he sent out an email to a lot of people on the MUFON area, you know, email list, contact list, and asked who would be interested in becoming part of a new investigative group. So he put together this presentation, and a group of us landed at this place, and he showed us a very nice presentation and told us what it was he wanted to try to accomplish. And it was essentially under the whole umbrella of, you know, as Paul and Antonio have said, draining the swamp of UFO scatology. But so we're trying to drain the swamp, he says, and what he would do is he would train us on how to approach an investigation. He had a system in place, and we would work that system and take cases first all together, so he would train us, and then eventually we'd be on our little training wheels, and then we'd be off on our own. So the first group, kind of some of them fell away because he emphasized this isn't a UFO club. We're not going to sit here and talk about UFOs and what different kind of aliens there may be. That just isn't it. So if you want that kind of thing, this isn't your place. So essentially, a group goes out because they didn't want to investigate. They wanted to chitty-chat about aliens. That wasn't the venue. And so then it kind of ended up being a group of maybe about 8 to 10. there in the Baltimore, Annapolis, Washington area, and we worked a lot of very interesting cases. And then Antonio got this really good job down in Florida. So, of course, he had to go there. And I ended up retiring in 2014, and I was not staying in the Baltimore, Washington area. So we made our great escape up to northern Michigan. And there were a group of people who were not really staying in touch through the ether, you know. We'd have our group meetings once a month on Google Plus Hangouts, and some just fell away because they were not interested in working this long distance. So after a few attritions, we had a death and deaths in the family. It's come down to the core group right now is just Paul and Antonio and myself. And I'm sure once Antonio finishes that dissertation, which, you know, takes an awful lot of time, in addition to all the things he's doing as a professor, and in addition to the things he's doing, trying to figure out if he has an answer for the Wow Signal podcast that happened in 1977, which is a very interesting thing. In addition to all that, he's very busy, so it's just a core group of three.
Yes, and recently there was those radio blasts they're trying to figure out. I'm sure you've probably heard about that. There are sequential blasts that are some type of radio signals that they're trying to figure out. It's something kind of new and exciting. I've been trying to reach Seth Shostak to see if he's been looking into that
part of it. Yeah, they pinpointed the area of the universe it's coming from, probably down to the galaxy, and now they're trying to figure out what it might be.
Yeah, so you know a bit about that.
Yeah, I think we talked about that a little bit about that on the Unseen podcast, things of that nature, and other anomalous stuff. Paul's very interested in and really following the Tabby star thing.
This is something
I know, yeah. I remember we discussed something like that at the same time he was talking about the Tabby star. So
I see.
He's a real science nut. I am not a scientist. I leave that to him, that part.
Yes, yes. So it's just the three of you. So what happens? Are you getting like an influx of reports, people that happen to find you on the web, or how does that work?
Yeah, the reports come into our website, which I gave you the link on. It's aerial-phenomenon.org. And there you can see, make a report. So you make that report and put X amount of data down and send that in. That goes to Antonio. Antonio sends it to me. I'm the chief of investigation. So I track all those cases. I make up the case files. I will do the initial contact with the witness. And I manage the caseload. I assign investigators when needed. I do an awful lot of triage work on my own rather than to assign this out to, at this point, Paul or Antonio, who's very busy and I'm retired. I can do a lot of that stuff real easy. Was it a meteor? You know, was it a bolide? What is ISS? Was it a weather balloon? Those things like that I can nail down pretty quick on my own. We probably get about two a week of reports.
And so as far as you must have like information for where the ISS, when it orbits and where it is, and also weather data, right. Stuff like that.
Yeah, you really put together an investigative toolbox, and a lot of that is, you know, just smartphone applications.
Really?
You can tell when the ISS will fly over any given point at any given time just by putting it time coordinates, UTC, and, you know, latitude and longitude. Or you can ask, when will the ISS fly over me? And it'll tell you exactly when it's going to be. And often when the ISS flies over, it does it on several consecutive nights at a different slight latitude, you know, because you're rolling through space. And it's pretty easy when somebody says they saw something that I'm pretty suspicious is the ISS. I write back and say, take a look tomorrow at this time and see if you see the same light. And if you do, then I think we've nailed down that what you saw was the International Space Station flying over. So, yeah, there's an awful lot of tools, weather tools, and when satellites will be where, and different links you can look at for past UFO activity and see if anything correlates to one you have. The internet, you know, is just what a repository. There's nothing Absolutely. You can't find on the internet.
Right. So you mentioned that you work with New Fork. Did I hear you say that?
I don't work. Well, yes, I go to the New Fork link. And, you know, if I got a case from Idaho, I'll go to the New Fork link and take a look at what people might have reported from Idaho that may correlate to what I've seen as a report. Or sometimes, and you know, it's not, that gives you a place to start for information. It isn't the end-all, be-all. It's just a point of reference. It's one of multiple points of reference that you need to pull in and chew on, discard that which isn't sending you anywhere, and then just keep honing in, focusing on, and nailing down what it is. But often, as a good first shotgun approach, you look at the other reporting agencies, New Fork, MUFON, several other places, and I mean, they're all over. They're all over. Those are just the really well-known ones. So that's a place to start gathering data. It's a starting point.
Now, I think, you know, Peter's pretty much got the tiger by the tail with that, with New Fork. I mean, working by himself, the phone calling all the time, and he was pretty fed up the last time I talked to him because he was getting some prank calls, and they just wouldn't stop. So he was having a hard time with that. And I kind of feel bad for him. And I asked him, you know, what is the future? Where, you know, is someone else going to be taking it over? And he says he is putting something in place for that. But that begs the question of, you know, cooperation, you know, and something like that. That phone number gets so many calls per month. You know, it'd be great to see like something merge where there could be the activity. Of course, you're only a three-person team at this point. But if you have this philosophy that sounds really good and looking at really good research, you know, it would be great to see something like that, you know, kind of merge with something.
It really would, but it is an absolute David and Goliath task. I mean, it's Lilliputians against the gigantic... Who was that guy? Gulliver, you know. And the Lilliputians aren't winning. But, you know, Antonio and Paul and I had a discussion on this not too long ago on one of our API case files. And we were talking about, and Leslie Kane was talking about this in her book. I'm going to point anybody who says to me, and I'll digress here a bit, well, prove to me there are UFOs. And, you know, I'm not proving anything to anyone. I tell them, if you're interested in it, because nothing I tell you is going to make you believe anything you don't want to, if you are really interested, I'll tell you to do one thing. Go read UFOs on the Record by Leslie Kane. You read that, and then we'll come back and have a discussion. Because if you don't even get through that book, I am not wasting 1 ounce of energy on trying to explain to somebody that there really are anomalous activities that have been going on. So we were thinking that if you could get all this disparate information gathered into a database, then that's something for people to start parsing through and chewing on. Now, three people sitting here doing it on their spare time is not going to work. This would have to be a concerted effort. And this is kind of where I think most people are finding our issue now is this this backup of data all over the place that has not been collated and parsed out. You know, you throw out the stuff that's clearly crap and start inputting that in some type of database whereby learned people who know how to get through this data and get usable information can begin to get usable information. I don't know how that's going to happen, but I don't think it will be an ad hoc committee that will do that. it's going to have to be somebody who has the resources, the time and the energy and the will to do that, because it is huge.
I'm sure. And I can't, you know, what can, like, for instance, just going back to what Peter, he has all those reports come in. I think he does delegate them out. I'm not sure if it's MUFON members.
Oh, he would have to. That's an unfathomable task for one person to do.
Absolutely.
He might have to get rid of his telephone. They might not have a hotline. You might have to send an instant message, a text to this number. Because if it gets to where, you know, the kooks or the hoaxers or the nefarious types just keep pestering him with junk and he can't go about the business of inputting data in his system, you know, he may be forced to cut that instant, cut the telephone thing and just take all written data.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes.
I can't even imagine how he does that and how he's done that all this time, but that he really, really, really is dedicated. I mean, my hat's off to him. What a man.
Right. Do you actually have a phone number listed anywhere on your website, or is it just through?
No. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We don't have a phone number.
All right. So let's talk about some of the cases that you've explored that are interesting. Are you able to say that some of the cases have not been solved?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. When you look at our, let me give you kind of a background here. We get, as I said, since we started late 2011, let's call it 2012, we had about 500 cases. Now, looking through those, roughly about one third of these cases, people say, I don't want this investigated. I just wanted to drop this information in your lap because they want to get it out. So one third don't request an investigation. One third, after you start working the case, they stop responding because you sometimes have to get back to them several times when information has led you to a certain point. And there might be information that is at odds. So once you call back or get in touch several times, they just say, look, you know, I don't really need an investigation, or they won't even give you that. They just don't answer the emails anymore or whatever. So one third drops out. About one third then is investigated. And out of that group that's investigated, I was looking just the other day in preparation for this, and I found that the majority of findings of what is investigated to completion is lens flares or optical artifacts from cameras often. And it happens far more than people realize. But what typically cues you in is when person says, you know, I didn't see this when I took the picture. Mm-hmm. But it was there magically. And that's, you know, bink, your first big red flag is you didn't see it because this is something that took place internally. The camera and the way it sees the world is different than the way the human sees the world. And so it throws up, you know, lens flares or other little optical artifacts. Or we had a case not too long ago where a guy saw, he'd been taking a picture of their fall yard, and they just finished cleaning up the yard. And so he took this picture and he said, I have this anomaly. It looks like there is this creature floating in the air above the house. And so we took a look at that, and Paul was the one that says, you know what? Look at the color. That is a fall leaf that happened to fall down just when he captured that, and it was slightly twisted and slightly blurred, and it appeared to be hovering over the house when indeed it was well close to him. And I wrote that back and said, we're darn sure that this was not a hovering entity, but most likely an oak leaf that fell down. And that guy never got back to me. He didn't say, oh, and he'd written, you know, like, I'm a scientist, and I know these things are not typical, but I saw this and that. And so the scientist, who was quite certain that he had caught a hovering alien, didn't really want to get back and own that one. So that type of thing. Now, the next one that we find often is known aerial objects, and those are probably the easiest ones to find. That's like high-altitude weather balloons, and it's astonishing how big science balloons are, how big and how high and how often they are traversing the sky during the daytime. So it's balloons, planes, helicopters, sky lanterns, birds that are captured, you know, in kind of a slow-mo blur, low-flying ham balloons. People will fly ham balloons, and I know a lot of Mylar balloons I see that have become slightly deflated, and so now they're in odd shapes, and they're wrinkling and floating through the sky, and those are common things. Next would be meteors and bolides, and they're real easy to find because if you go to the American Meteorological Society, you will see an entire list of 15 or 20 people who report that bolide blew up over at that exact same time where this guy could see. Then under that would be the ISS or satellite flyovers, which is another easy thing to find. Then weather phenomenon, which is probably not as common as I would have thought for an explanation. Pareidolia and apophenia is a common thing, and that is just mechanisms inside the human mind and the brain, and that's how our human mind and brain got ordered. We see patterns and things and take them to mean something, or that's apophenia. If you take it to have a special meaning, some strange thing you saw that you take to have an undue special meaning, everybody else would say, look, that's just a lens flare. And you say, no, this is the Valakon's high fringe area localizer. And so it's hard to dissuade somebody from an apophenia or pareidolia case, but you could throw it out there. Every once in a while, we get what we suspect is psychosis, but we can't diagnose psychosis other than the fact that the person who wrote the witness statement just seems like they can't really be coherent. And very, very seldom have we gotten suspected hoaxes, I'm happy to say.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I've had some really good cases, and I believe they're genuine. And here's the most important one, Martin, that I want to talk about.
Oh, goody.
And I want to talk about it because it got a bad rap, and I want to set the record straight here. Now, back in 2012, I got a case out of Niagara Falls, Canada, that still to this time, I am convinced through due diligence that it remains the only video of an actual visitation of men in black. Now, as far as I know, I am the only person who talked with three of four witnesses in that case. I talked with them personally, or I corresponded with them in the email. And lots of people have said it's a hoax, and it came out about the same time as a new Men in Black movie or something like that. Part of the problem is that some of the information got sent out wrong. They said, oh, it was a Halloween prank, but it was not. This, I am convinced, was an actual Men in Black visitation to a work site to harangue a man who had made a UFO report. This was, although I did the case in 2012, January, February 2012, this incident took place in 2008. And so in the fall, October 14, 2008, this man who was a night manager for a hotel on the Canadian side overlooking Horseshoe Falls, and one of the guys who worked there at night were having a cigarette break, looked out and saw a light and thought there was a plane going to crash on Niagara Falls. But indeed, the thing kept coming to them and raised up and went up over them, and it was a gigantic black triangle.
Wow.
And so the witness who put this in was awestruck and ran around the corner to try to find it, and he was struck by this huge center red. I mean, it was right out of Central Casting, black triangle, right out of David Marler. I mean, you know, the guy knows his black triangles. This was that, and it had that center red light going.
Wow.
Just pulsates as it goes over. So this guy's awestruck. He runs back to the other guy. The other guy is like, do not ask me about that. I will never talk about it.
Wow.
Gone back into work, would never talk to my witness about it again. So he was not going to go on the record. He got his brain fried by that. He couldn't go there. So the witness was just shocked by it. And maybe a couple of weeks later, he saw another, not as close and not as, you know, awesome, but he saw another one. Now, he made this report to a guy in the British Columbia area. You may have heard of him, Brian Vike. Now, Brian Vike was a British Columbia area researcher, and that's who you'd go to in British Columbia to make your UFO reports. So Brian Vike made a report on that. And in addition, my witness talked to a newspaper person because there had been a flap over the Niagara Falls area, both sides, U.S. And Canadian, for a period of time during the 2008, you know, in the fall and winter 2008. So it was kind of a big deal there. Now, so now we got fall 2008. And so some things are happening to my witness. You know, here's another interesting thing that people that at one point did not want to put together because it's woo-woo and they don't want to go to woo-woo. They just want to stay with nuts and bolts. But this witness had begun to have what are commonly considered paranormal type events, you know, rapping on walls and somebody walking and being no one there and the phone ringing and nothing happening and people walking in his attic when no one was home and he'd go up in there, just that type of thing. So this goes on. And then now this point of time, we're at Mother's Day, 2014, Mother's Day, 2009. That's May 14. This guy who would normally be at work that day decided to take his wife and his mother to Mother's Day dinner. So he kind of last minute says, "Oop, I'm not going to work. I'm taking my women out to a hard-earned Mother's Day dinner." So he wasn't there. And in come that day, this group of men in black in May 2009. And, well, it scared the bejesus out of the people who were there. And most particularly, this one man in black of the two came to a desk where you go, you know, when you want to know what can I do around Niagara Falls, you know, and they hand out a few
pamphlets. Yeah.
Yes. So these two characters, they walk up to this little gal who looked up and was startled by their appearance, and it was recounted to the witness the next day. I mean, they were all buzz about, good God, you wouldn't believe these two characters that came in to see you. So she was very, very, very frightened. And the security manager of that airport, I mean, of that hotel, the security manager said to my witness, you know, I happened to catch that on our security footage. Would you like to look at it? So yeah. So they look at it and said, wow, that's really something. They saw him coming, but they never really, he never got anything of them leaving. But the bellman there that is seen in the video, are you familiar with this video?
No, I'm not. No.
Okay. All right. Well, if you Google Men in Black in Canadian Hotel or something like that, you'll find that. Okay. So, these guys leave, and the witness finds out about it the next day. The security manager says, I saw it. And the witness says, well, could you burn that off? So, yeah, he could. But so he burned off a data disk of that video, and he gave it to Shane. And he gave it to the witness. The witness could never get that video to play. So now this is 2009 spring. And so I guess he saw our website or something like that, or Antonio had been on a talk show. So in December or January 2012, he puts a witness statement in on that, and I begin the investigation. And offhanded, he said, you know, I happen to have video of that. And I said, what? So I said, well, send that to me. He says, but I can't get it to play. I don't think it works. And I said, well, just send it to me anyway. And I said, and send it the most secure way you can. And I think out of Canada, that dang thing costs $50 to get sent with tracking and all that. But at any rate, so I get it. So I have a computer literate friend, and we took a look at it, and we determined it was a proprietary file on proprietary software that is used in a hotel system. So she went out on the web, found that proprietary software, downloaded it, put the disc in, up pops through the skin of this proprietary software, this footage of the one camera in the lobby that tracked these two characters walking in. And so I did a screen catch of that on my computer and put together a report with the witness's statement and made a video report and released that to Coast to Coast. And so it got a pretty good amount of airplay with, you know, a fair amount of people saying, oh, that's just hoax and blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is, folks, I, until something changes, am quite certain that was actual somebody's, not fakery or people playing a stunt, because they had some aspect of them that was scary to be in proximity to. So that is probably my favorite case.
Yeah.
When it comes to having footage that backs up a witness statement, a secondary statement, a tertiary statement of a case. I'm very proud of that one. And you can say what you will of it. Believe it or not, I don't care. It changes nothing in the facts behind that case.
Someone in the chat room just checked it out and they said it looks like the Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
But
yeah, well, it...
that is bizarre. It wasn't. I mean, the whole thing of Men in Black, so many cases over the years, and it goes much further back than when the movies came out. You know, I mean, you know, it has nothing to do with the movies, actually.
I know. And, you know, the man's name escapes me now, but he's made his whole career Men in Black guy. What's his name?
Are you talking about Will Smith? And
No, the researcher. He's a British guy.
Oh, no, I know. Yes. I know there is. I know Nick Redfern's done some work.
Yes. Nick Redfern. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. Nick Redfern doesn't have that case.
Yeah.
That's a real case, Nick.
Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you another one. That case, when it was recounted about how the lady behind the desk so oddly reacted to these two characters, that triggered a case that came in that I ended up calling, I think we covered this in our API case files, episode 3, we called Plastic Soldiers. That was another case of mine that was an amazing case. And some of these things, you know, Men in Black, like you say, what is that? That is so, we're still trying to figure out what aerial phenomena is that disappears like that or turns on a dime or leaves so fast that the eye cannot perceive the trail. We're still trying to figure that out. And then there's ancillary weirdness associated with all of this that, I tell you, you don't know where to put it. The mind reels. Here is a case where the mind reels. This guy got in touch with me in April 2014, and this thing happened in the summer of 2001. He knows it was shortly before 9/11. So this is a kid traveling with a friend, and he's going from San Diego to some point in Arizona, Scottsdale, traveling Interstate 8. So he's traveling along Interstate 8, and they pull into this little out-of-the-way place off the highway to go get a Coke and a few little snacks. And so one guy stays with the car. Witness 2 stays with the car. Witness 1 goes in. And he noticed when he went in, there were a couple of troop carriers, and he's really into military because his familial history is very into the military. He had a father in the military, a grandfather, and he was thinking strongly at that time of going in. So he goes in, and he looks very closely at the BDUs, you know, the battle dress uniforms, and he's noticing all these recruits that are lined up one after the other. He says 8 or 10 of them, in a line standing at the cash register, and they all have a bottle of water. So he thinks, well, okay, they're really squared away. And he looked at, you know, the starch on the BDU fatigues and all that, and he gets his water, and he queues up behind these guys. And he's just kind of looking around, and he's looking at the back of this guy, and he says, I started looking at the back of this recruit's head, and it looked like a Barbie doll plastic skin. And he said, and I was trying to figure out what that could be. And then he kind of looks down the line and begins to notice everybody's skin in everybody's hat is this Barbie doll plastic material. And so he thinks, wait a second. And so he says, okay, I'm going to go to the front and pretend to ask this gal there at the cash register something. I'm going to go look at their face. So he goes that way, and he comes back, and every one of the recruits, bam, their cap, you know, is right down over their eyes, and he looks at their faces. He said every one of those soldiers was an exact replica. So at that point, he's lost it, and he drops his stuff, and he goes out, and he says, dude, go in and go take a look at those soldiers in line, and you tell me what you see. And the guy says, I'll finish that up. You go in and take a look at that. So the guy says, all right. He goes in. He takes a look, and he says, this isn't right. And he comes back out, and he says, those guys aren't even human. Let's go. And so off they go. Now, the one kid, witness one, says, This was just, he couldn't just leave it at that. So they go down the road, and they wait a little bit. Now, this is where it gets even weirder, Martin. They wait a little bit, and here comes this troop carrier with all these plastic soldiers in it. And they diverge off the interstate, and they're traveling. They're going overland, and they're headed towards this kind of hill. And they're watching them, wondering where they're going to go. They disappear inside the hill, and there is no hole. And that was it. These guys were get to where we're going. And the other guy, you know, I ended up interviewing him. I got two witness statements. Both those witnesses corroborated that story. Now, witness one was exceedingly flummoxed over it, because he'd had other experiences, and his family had other experiences. And this was just another one of those things that just, you know, you have an anomaly box, I call it. Some people do. I do. And you toss those things in there, and you get them out of your psyche by just tossing them in this little box that you won't worry about, because you don't have an answer and you aren't going there. After a while, that anomaly box, the lid falls off and these contents fall out, and you have no choice but to kind of look at them before you plop them back in. And as in my case and many others, when you look at them, you start to throw them out, and they make kind of this strange trail that you don't really want to follow, but there it is. So this kid, you know, he could not really let that go for a long time. It's not that it drove him nuts, but it was so extraordinary that happened in 2001. And he recounted that to me on the telephone as if it were the day before.
Wow.
So that was another one.
Now that they actually, even though it really doesn't have anything to do with UFOs, they actually contact you?
Yes, he contacted me because of the witness statement from the men in black at the Niagara Falls
County
desk. The way she felt and what she saw of the men in black skin, it didn't look real. They didn't blink. You know, their hair looked like it was fake. You could pick it off and toss it like a toupee. So the same visceral fear and anxiety and inability to cope with that experience triggered this kid's experience, and he related that. And that one, I had two corroborating witnesses. There was no way I could prove that, but I did not feel, you know, it was, in my opinion, an undetermined case. And, you know, we get rid of an awful lot of goofy stuff and a lot of stuff that is a very interesting story. But look, if there was a single witness, and if this thing happened at night, and you can't remember the date, and you don't really, there's just not, there isn't a there. You don't have things you can hang an investigation on.
Yeah.
But, and this was, I was just listening to this interesting story, you know, until he told me he had a witness to corroborate that, then bing, okay, this could make an investigation. So that was an interesting one.
Yeah.
I have a couple more. Do we have time?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We have plenty of time. We're just at the first hour right now. All right, everyone. That's it for the first hour. Thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to support the show and listen to the full shows, plus the archives, as well as the Everything Else show, all you have to do is pitch in for $2 or more a month. All that information is on podcastufo.com. Our guest next week is John Burroughs, who actually had laryngitis this week. Hopefully, he'll be feeling better. And don't forget to like our Facebook page. Remember to like us on Facebook for all the latest UFO news. I need to thank Peggy for that. She helps out every day posting stories up there. I think there's 23,000 or so likes, and feel free to check that out. And that's it for the show. Thanks again. And remember to keep your eyes to the sky.